From the hills of West Virginia to the high rises of Chicago. For over 30 years, Dan Frio has mastered the real estate market as one of the country's premier mortgage advisors. Dan is now sharing his experience and knowledge with the AM 560 audience. So sit back and learn how Dan has helped his clients manage the ups and downs of the real estate market across the country. Now, here's the host of the Mortgage Update, Dan Frio.
Welcome to the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio, and I, of course, am Dan Frio. Today we have a special guest, so don't go anywhere. Today we got Steve Cortez. We're going to get him on the line and talk to him about the economy, what he thinks about housing, and a whole bunch of other stuff. We got to pick his brain because he's got the ear of Donald Trump. He's a friend of Donald Trump, and he's on a lot of the campaigns for Donald Trump. And so we got that coming up in the next two segments. But right now, I want to bring up the speed on what's going on in the economy. What I try to do at the beginning of each show is tell you, you know, here's what happened in the markets this week. Here's what I'm predicting for the next maybe week, 2 weeks, months, you know, quarters going out. So to inform you not only about maybe the stock market, but the housing market, what's going on with interest rates, and what I follow for all of my clients. So again, my name is Dan Frio, the Mortgage Update. I do this every week or every night on WYLL Radio. You can tune in to that station. It's AM 1160. It's a sister station of AM 560. You can tune in every night from 7:30 to 8 p.m. And then you can find me on WIND that you're listening to right now, Saturday mornings from 7 to 8. So what happened today in the markets? Well, this week we had the presidential Democratic debate. Wow. Let's leave it at that. So let's go on. What happened in the economy? What I do is for my clients. I don't just take your application, click, 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 lock you in and move on. I try to be a mortgage advisor. So what do I mean by that? When you deal with a lot of the other companies, you're just clicking some buttons maybe on your phone or on your computer. They put you through the process, the best program for them, the best rate for them, hopefully on their quantity of deals that they get. You know, they get a lot of people to stick and stay with the programs they have. They probably don't have the best rate or the lowest fee structure for you. So I try to be a mortgage advisor to say, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to find you the right program. I'm going to give you options for your different programs. But what I try to do my best at is trying to signal the perfect time to lock in your rate. So a lot of the stuff I'm going to go over with you on a weekly basis, we're going to talk about the markets and where they're heading. And that's one of the reasons why I asked Steve to come in today is his perspective of he used to be a trader on Wall Street. He was an analyst. He knows Trump. He talks with him. He deals with him directly. He's got his finger on the pulse. He knows what's going on with the markets in regards to interest rates and a whole slew of other things. So that's why I'm asking him in. And I'm going to try to get him in monthly just to give us his take on what's going on with politics in the economy. But right now, let me go in, and here's what I do for my clients. These are some of the things that I watch. This week, we saw the stock market had a really nice increase again. Some of the biggest pieces of this puzzle is the coronavirus is starting to subside. So that's starting to get a little more euphoria back in the market. But there's a lot of technicals in the background that most people don't get. And these are the things that I watch, and Steve will probably reiterate. These are things that he watches also as an analyst. And then if we have enough time, we'll try to explain why we watch these things. So let me go into, you know, how's the economy doing right now? Well, we all know the employment numbers are doing fantastic. So that's, you know, one piece of the puzzle. Here's what I follow. I follow the labor markets. That's employment and unemployment. Inflation. How do we monitor inflation? We watch the PPI, the producer price index. We also watch the manufacturing numbers. How is manufacturing going? Is it going well? That means the economy's, you know, kicking on all cylinders. Is it stagnant or is it declining? And that'll give us, you know, leeway into what's happening in maybe the next quarter, next 6 months, maybe 12 to 18 months out. Then there's another piece of the puzzle. And I'm going to ask Steve about this, if he used to follow this when he was an analyst. But I watched the Cass Freight Index. And that was, I have a lot of family members in the logistics. And that's basically shipping products throughout the country. And just think about it. if more and more products are being shipped, that means manufacturing is going well. Well, let's start at the beginning of the food chain. People have the comfort, or they're not uncertain about, you know, their future, so they're buying more stuff. Okay, if you're buying more stuff, that means more stuff needs to be shipped to the place where you're buying. More things are being shipped to that place. That means the shipping industry is kicking in. That then goes back to the manufacturer. Manufacturing numbers. Then that goes back to all the way to unemployment or employment. So we start, you know, where is the consumer buying? How is that product getting there? So that's what I'm going to start at, that piece of the puzzle. Bad news came out this week. That index was down 9% year over year. That's terrible. It's a really bad number. And the number has been decreasing since May of 2019. Okay, so, but don't fear, because I watch, again, we go over five major components of this, what I monitor to see where we're heading to. So that number is bad. So we'll make it a negative or a minus. So let's go back to the down that food chain. Employment is doing very well. Last week, or about 2 weeks ago, we had came out with those numbers. Those numbers were fantastic. So they were actually better than expected. So we're going to give that a plus. Unemployment is basically stagnant right now. It's basically flat. I think this week they came out with a number and the unemployment rate was down. I think we lost there was 4,000 people added. I mean, that's virtually nothing. So we're going to make that a neutral. The producer price index, that dictates or signals the Fed about inflation. How is inflation playing a part of the economy right now? Here's why we watch this, okay? The Fed has certain triggers in place. So they're saying, you know, we're sitting on the sideline and we'll come in and either raise rates if the economy's overheating and there we need to curtail a lot of things, or they're going to reduce rates if needed to spur activity in the markets. Okay, so they basically have an adrenaline shot that they're sitting there. They're either going to take blood adrenaline out of you or they're going to pump it into you. So that's what they do when they, you know, reduce rates and pump liquidity into the markets. They watch the producer price index very closely, and they have a trigger point that they want the producer price index or inflation numbers not to exceed 2% a year. Well, numbers just came out this week, and they were hot. We're right now, we went from a 1.3% number to 1.6. So we're approaching that 2% quicker than anybody expected. So that we're going to take that as a negative, okay? Manufacturing. So we're all the way now at that beginning of the food chain, basically. The manufacturing numbers are coming in very well. So let's just compact this in a little segment. So we have five different signals. Three are good, two are bad. What's going to happen? I don't really think much of anything's going to happen. The market right now, basically the analyst on Wall Street, they're predicting a 100% chance the Fed is going to reduce rates in the summer. However, the Fed came out this week, and I don't expect you to know all this. That's why I come in weekly and just try to bring up the speed on what's going on. The Fed came in and said, you know what, we're just going to monitor everything and make sure inflation's in check and make sure the coronavirus isn't crushing the U.S. economy and all this other stuff. But basically, we're just going to sit on the sidelines. Do I think that is, are they telling us the complete truth? I don't. And here's why. If they came out and said, you know what, we're probably going to drop rates in the summer, you're going to see the market react instantaneously, then they're going to be kind of forced that in the summertime, they're going to have to do something. So they come in and basically lay back and just say, you know what, we're just going to kind of sit on the sidelines here and continue to monitor things. So if you watch the market this week, there was a blip at the end of the week because of the coronavirus easing and some other things, but it's basically kind of been stagnant. You know, yes, they come out, you hear on the news every night, we just hit another record high. We just hit another record high. However, those record highs aren't like 100 or 200 points more than they were the day before. They're points. You know, we might be, again, if it ends up 5 points better than where we were the day before, it's still another record, but it's not, you know, exorbitant like it used to be. So there's one last thing that I watch, and most people can't even find this. There's a greed index. Believe it or not, there's a greed index in the market that people can monitor and watch to see how is the stock market. Is it? Do we feel it's overpriced, underpriced, you know, in line? The greed index is showing that the stock market, and this again, we'll ask Steve about this, is, I won't say vastly, but it's pretty overbought, meaning there's a lot of euphoria in the market. I'll put it that way. So I am going to say it now. I'm predicting that we're going to have a mini, I won't say crash, but we're going to have a pretty major pullback within the next 3 to 6 months. That's my take on it. It could be anything that spurs that. Like you saw when the coronavirus first hit, we had that one day where we lost 600 points over just fears of the coronavirus. Nobody even really knew the impact of it yet. But there was a 600-point, you know, reduction. That was basically just, uh-oh, we're going to start dumping this stuff. I remember back in 2000 and then also 2008 and 9 when the housing market was vastly overpriced. And in 2000, in both of those segments, the stock market was vastly overpriced, but the euphoria was, you know, you pumped some money into it and you buy a stock in January and by March it doubled. You're seeing, not to that extent, but you're seeing a lot of that right now. So I'm going to say this a lot, and if you follow me on YouTube, you hear this probably every other night. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Don't forget that. So if you're killing it in the stock market, pull some money off the table. That's my advice for the day. So don't go away. We're going to be back with special guest Steve Cortez. We're going to ask him about the stock markets, the housing market, the economy, and what he thinks, just his thoughts on Trump. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Now, more of the Mortgage Update on AM 560. Here's your host, Dan Frio.
Welcome back to the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio. And I, of course, am Dan Frio. As I promised, I asked Steve Cortez to be a guest on the show, and he said yes. And so welcome, Steve. Thanks for coming on. Greatly appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Steve's on every night on WIND Radio from 5 to 7. And I listen to him every night, and he has great insight. And the reason why I asked him to be on the show, we had lunch a couple weeks ago, and I learned a lot about him. He was a trader on Wall Street. He's on Fox all the time. He has the ear of Donald Trump. But where I first heard you or saw you was every week you would be on some kind of left-wing radio, just people just pounding you. And I'm like, what is this guy doing? You know, why do you put yourself through this every week after week after week? And then you gave me some insight that you were kind of asked by Trump to do this. So,
right.
Welcome, Steve.
I appreciate it. Yes, no, I'm not just a sadomasochist. I don't look for torturous situations.
Yeah.
But I do think it's important. You know, look, let's face it. Most media out there, most corporate media, leans heavily left.
Oh, yeah.
There's very little real journalism in this country. And I think it's important for those of us who are believers in the America First movement, those of us who are supporters of President Trump, it's important for us to not just completely ignore those media outlets. So I went into the lion's den very often. I worked for CNN for 2 years. As you can imagine, every TV hit was a scrum. I mean, I always felt like I was stepping into the political version of the octagon.
Yeah.
But I think it was important. And I hope that there were viewers out there, maybe not the majority, but I hope there was a portion of CNN viewers who were willing to at least consider what I had to say regarding our philosophy.
Well, and the nice thing about on your show every night, you always have somebody. The other night you had a gentleman on there. He actually did a really good job pleading the case of, you know, the left side of the equation. And he had some great content. But the nice thing is you guys don't sit there and scream at each other. You
right.
basically you have a cordial conversation, like you said. Let's just you're not, if you can turn 1% of the people, you know, maybe, or at least just give your facts behind everything. The tough thing is mm-hmm. when you don't hear the facts. You just hear
sure.
the rhetoric of they just scream back and forth, and it's like, guys, can you answer the question?
Right.
That's what
I think that's so important, and I'm really trying to do that on the Steve Cortez Show every night. I do have a lot of liberal guests on. I have a lot of folks who do not care for the president or his agenda, and I want to have good debates and discussions because I think the food fight that we see too often that I've been a part of, I mean, I don't set it up that way, but right. I've been a participant, an unwilling participant in some ways in a lot of those food fights on cable news. I don't think it makes anybody smarter. I don't think it makes our country better.
Right.
So I'm trying to do it a different way.
Here's what I always say with some of this stuff. You know, I'm all for the First Amendment. Where I think there's a fine line is when the First Amendment, I'm sure, wasn't for those to go on TV, you know, it wasn't even at the time, but the news or the journalists to come out there and spread, I'll just say it, lies.
Sure.
You know, I'm sure the content was supposed to be you're giving the truth. Okay, I'm for the First Amendment. But if you're just going to spread rhetoric and lies out there,
right.
Eh. And I mean, when they're pure lies, there might be a judgment call, but a lie is a lie. I mean, when it's just
no. And Dan, you know, you listen. I think it's an important point. By the way, I'm very glad that the Covington kids, that Nick Sandman in particular, that he sued CNN.
Yeah.
We don't know the terms of his settlement, but CNN settled with him, probably a very generous financial amount. I think we need to see more of that kind of litigation. I don't generally love litigation. I've never sued anyone in my life. I hope I never have to.
Yeah.
However. I do think that, unfortunately, media, it's been too difficult, I think, in our country to sue media outlets for slander or libel. And I think that I hope we see more actions like what the Covington kids did because they were absolutely smeared and wrong.
Got it. Yeah.
And there's more suits. By the way, he filed suits against a lot of folks. He's only settled that one. More are continuing. But I think that'd be a good thing for our country because, to your point, just because somebody has the freedom to go out and say what they want doesn't mean that they should be consequence-free if they tell a lie about
exactly.
you, a demonstrable lie.
Yeah. All right. So the reason why I had you on here is I wanted to get your you had one show in particular that talked about the housing, the economy, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I actually called in, and you were grateful enough to take the call, and it was just a
right.
little segment. But I wanted to get your take on, you have a lot of experience on the economic side. You know Wall Street. You also know the government piece of things. I wanted your intake on what do you think the economy, the true facts behind it? Because you watch
right.
one side of the channels and the world is ending. Then you watch the other side of
right.
the channels and it's, you know, euphoria. So what's the facts? What is your take on the economy right now?
Sure. Well, listen, I think the economy is incredibly strong. And by the way, to some degree, don't just take my word for it. Let's listen to, for example, small business owners. So
yeah.
CNBC does a quarterly survey of small business owners. 64% of them approve of Donald Trump's handling of his presidency, which is a new record high for small business owners. So the entrepreneurs out there, the American strivers, the creators, the job providers, they are overwhelmingly incredibly optimistic about this economy right now. And almost every survey of sentiment, whether it's consumer sentiment, small business, big business, you name it, all of them, they're either at all-time highs or they're at high levels that we haven't seen, Dan, since the 1990s. So
yeah.
There's an optimism in the land that is really palpable and real. And specifically regarding housing, I think this is so crucial. We're starting to see the housing market now in terms of some of the great data that's coming out. For example, building permits, which just came out this week, we had a 13-year high level on building permits that we hadn't seen since 2007. What's really fantastic about that, I'm somebody who's traded mortgages and interest rates for a quarter century before I went full-time into politics now. And what's really different and better about the housing boom right now is that it's not built on nonsense. It's not built on liar loans
right.
and leverage. That 2000 number, the last time we saw building permits this high, that was built on quicksand. That
yeah.
was built on a lot of nonsense and dishonesty. And, you know, we know, of course, how it ended. It practically sank the world into a global depression. Now, if anything, it's difficult to get a mortgage.
Right.
Anybody who's done it lately knows that. I mean, the documentation that's provided, there's no more liar loans. There's no more, you know, put nothing down and sign your name and walk away with a condo. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So this is real now, is my point. So it's real. It's better. It's substantive. And what I'm just so excited about is that Americans believe again. You know, we really needed that. We need to believe that we can grow because it can become a virtuous cycle upward. Belief begets belief, which begets investment and hiring and spending. And right now we're seeing that virtuous cycle really work in the American economy.
Yeah, when you had that segment, the reason why I called is like you hit everything. Most of the time when you talk to somebody about the housing market, they'll know bits and pieces of things. When you start saying, you know, the mortgages were just too easy, the liar loans, the documentation loans, I was like, hey, he gets it. I've done this since 1988. So I've seen the good, the bad, the ugly, and the terrible. Where do you see, so the housing market, the building permits are kicking right now. What's your prediction on interest rates? Where do you see the Fed going? Where do you see, because of what they follow with manufacturing, the PPI and everything, what do you see in there?
You know, I think interest rates are going to stay low, and I wish I didn't have that prediction, quite honestly, because it would be good for our country if interest rates would rise, not dramatically, but if they would start to tick up. It would be good for savers in this country. It would be a good sign for the economy. Unfortunately, here's the reason. As optimistic as I am on the American economy, the reason I don't think we're going to see a material move higher in interest rates is the global economy, because as good as things are here in the United States, they're awful in most of the world. We just got a lot of data out of Europe, for example, that shows the German industrial economy is back into contraction. It's actually in a recession. I think a lot of Europe is likely in recession. China was slowing dramatically even before the coronavirus. Coronavirus risks now have greatly exacerbated the situation in China, which again was already deteriorating and slowing before the virus. So unfortunately, the U.S. in a lot of ways, unfortunately for us, we are an island of growth. We're really an oasis of optimism and innovation. However, given the global scenario, it's my view that interest rates are going to stay very, very low because global deflationary pressures are still meaning pushing prices down, pricing power down. On a global level, I think is still going to be the persistent theme. Now, that's also, though, look, as I said, it would be good for our country in some ways for interest rates to rise, not quickly, but you know, a slow rise would be a good thing. On the other hand, there are, of course, benefits to low rates, and housing being absolutely one of them, making housing affordable, particularly for first-time home buyers.
Right. I never understood until probably a decade ago why everybody was so focused on house permits, house building. And then, you know, my eyes were open that there's so many components of the economy that goes into building that home. Employment. Right. And then the raw materials, the plumbing, the electrical, the this, the that, the lumber, everything that goes into, you know, building a home. Just think how many companies are doing very well because of the home builders.
Right.
So that's a big
great
piece
point.
Of it.
The multiplier effect of housing is truly incredible. You're exactly right. It involves so many people, so many businesses, so many jobs. You know, you mentioned, for instance, lumber. I watch all markets. Lumber prices are going crazy lately. That's a good sign also for construction generally. You know, we want lumber prices to rise. But you're right. The multiplier effects of housing are perhaps greater than for any other segment of the economy.
Gotcha. Okay, we're up against the clock. Well, I want to thank those sponsors out there. Dottie Dose with Echo Home Inspections, Inc., Gary Hall of RE/MAX Central, AD Supplies, Pat Frio, Stort Ramirez with East Signature Realty, Tom Mirabali, your independent insurance provider with Blue Cross Blue Shield, Pat Noon of PJN Tax Solutions Group, CreditScoresAndMore.com, and Universal Masonry Group, Joe Tribuzio. Thank you so much for making this possible. Also, to hear any of my shows or past shows or find any of my sponsors, you can go to themortgageupdate.net. That's themortgageupdate.net. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Steve Cortez, host of The Steve Cortez Show, heard here on AM 560 The Answer. When we come back, going to talk tariffs. Don't go away.
You're listening to The Mortgage Update on AM 560. Now, here's your host, Dan Frio.
Welcome back to The Mortgage Update with Dan Frio. I've got Steve Cortez here, and I want to shift the topic to tariffs. I'm from a small little town in West Virginia. I think I told you that at one time. It was all up and down the river where I grew up. It was steel mills. And it's basically a ghost town at this point. The tariffs. Is that what kind of is making China contract, or is there other pieces of that puzzle that you think that's causing that?
No, listen, I think it's absolutely part of it. Part of why China was slowing, you know, and again, was slowing even before the virus, China was slowing pretty dramatically. And I think one of the main reasons is, yes, Donald Trump, finally, and by the way, this is one of the main reasons he was elected. I'm not sure he would have won the election if it weren't for the China issues. Donald Trump decided to finally demand fairness and reciprocity from China as a trading partner, because China has been abusing the United States economically for decades. Yeah. It's unfortunately done so with our complicity, though, at
right.
least at the
no,
highest level of politics and business in this country. And he said enough. He said, you know, unless there's fairness and reciprocity in our trade relationship, you are going to face consequences via tariffs. And so the Chinese economy has suffered dramatically because of that. Because here's the thing about China, too. The economic model that they've built is totally dependent on exports. They have never really developed the kind of internal consumer economy that they need to be a first world country. It's nothing even close, for instance, to the U.S. consumer economy. So what I mean by that is they must export to Europe. They must export to the United States. We made that more difficult, and we made it more troublesome, and I think rightly so, because they weren't being real trade partners with the United States. They were really being trade abusers of the United States, and they caused a lot of havoc in places like West Virginia, like your home state. And so anyway, all of that, I think, was necessary and good, problematic for China, for sure, and look, causes some problems in the United States. It's not consequence-free here, either. But again, I think it's a confrontation that we needed to have for decades. And Donald Trump finally stepped up with the smarts and the guts to say, we're going to hold China's feet to the fire.
Well, it's funny, when all this was taking place, the left side of the equation would always come back and say, here we go. It's going to crush the world. Everything's going to come to an end. You know, nothing's going to come of this. You're starting a war with them. And then, you know, a year later, they're at the bargaining table. So I want to ask you, just, you live in Illinois. I live in Illinois. Illinois just seems to be the, I hate to say it, kind of the armpit of the country right now, between our politics, our economics, the taxes, the housing, everything. Obviously, this is the mortgage update, so I'm you know, reliant on housing for my business.
Sure.
But what's your thought on the economy? And then that does proceed out to the housing market.
Sure, exactly. Yeah, you know, and unfortunately, look, and I hate to say this, all right, I'm born and raised in Chicago. I have raised a family in the city of Chicago, which is not always an easy thing to do financially and otherwise. So, you know, I love this place. I love this city. You know, if you cut me, I bleed Chicago Bears blue and orange, okay? So I'm not one who's, I'm not looking for reasons to rip on Chicago or rip on the state of Illinois. However, I have to be honest about the situation. And, you know, we should probably have signs at the roads, you know, as you enter Illinois, particularly this time of year, that say, you know, come for the cold and stay for the taxes and the corruption.
Yeah.
Because that's what we offer right now. We offer frigid winters, tons of corruption and confiscatory taxes. And it's really a shame because, you know, I talked about how great the housing market is on a national level. That's fantastic for the country. But you know what? It is not here in Illinois for very obvious reasons. Our property taxes are far too high, first of all. The growth rate is far too low. Too many people are leaving. You know, all the data shows this. And what's really unfortunate is for people who decide to leave Illinois. And look, I don't want to leave. As I said, I've raised a family here. This is my home. I want to stay. But if you do decide you want to leave Illinois, you sell your house that generally has not appreciated, right? When I talk to anybody who's thinking about leaving, they always say the same thing to me, Dan. They say, I'm just hoping to get out without a loss. I mean, that's literally how we've been trained to think in Illinois. That's not the way most of the real estate markets work in America.
Know.
If you talk to people in Texas and Tennessee and Florida, they're like, I've made 30% of my home the last three years, right? So so we're selling here hoping to not take a loss. And then we have to pay up wherever it is that we want to move, right? Because those places have appreciated. So it's troubling. Here's the light potentially at the end of the tunnel. The feds are all over Mike Madigan right now. They have surrounded him and his cronies with some very serious investigations. If we can actually put some handcuffs on some really, really senior people and get some indictments, maybe then, Dan, things can change and we can save this terrific city and this terrific state.
I'm trying to get Alan Skillcorn. He's a House representative. He came on about 2 months ago, and he was kind of signaling a little bit about the Madigan. What's happening with Madigan? It was a curveball to me. And then just the other day, I heard some more information about him. So we're actually trying to reach out to him right now to get him back on the show to give us his take, because it is shocking on how much power Madigan has.
I tell people outside of Illinois, he is probably one of the least known, most powerful politicians in the United States of America, because he's barely known outside the state of Illinois. He really is. He's very quiet and stealthy, but he's also very diabolical and very powerful. And he rules his state, and he has for decades, and it has been for his benefit and the benefit of his cronies to the detriment of the citizens of Illinois. However, it seems, you know, again, I hope against hope, it seems as though the feds are getting pretty serious about their investigations of at least people in his orbit, if not Madigan himself. And maybe that's what we need, something that dramatic, to finally shake free the politics of this state. And again, get our state growing again, growing in people, growing in house prices, growing in every way we should be. Chicago is the greatest city in the world. This is a great state. I want it to be saved. What's been going on here has been really nothing but a complete shame.
Yeah. One last question for you. I know you got to go. The stock market. I do a YouTube video every night, and I give predictions on, you know, what the economy did today and rates in the stock market, and what's, you know, my prediction is the next week, month, so forth. I always say pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered.
Right.
What's your take on the stock market right now?
Yeah, I think the stock market is a little rich here. I mean, rich, okay, meaning I think it's a bit excessively priced. I do.
Okay.
No, I don't think it's dramatically overvalued.
I'm not
calling, you know, to short the market. I'm not saying we're going to crack, none of that. I mean, because I do think the fundamentals are great for this economy, particularly for wages in this country. And I think interest rates are, as I said, if I'm right about interest rates staying low, that's very supportive of equity markets as well. But I think you also have to realize that the U.S. equity market has so massively outperformed the rest of the world. Given that level of outperformance, I don't know that this is a time to get really excited from here.
Yeah.
You know, we've come a heck of a long way, and you know, again, this is me putting on my market trader hat, not my politics hat. So
yeah.
You know, take
no,
off
that's
the
why
topic.
I asked. Yeah, and you
yeah.
see the
and
market.
I'm not bearish, but I don't love the prices here either.
Same here.
I mean, I'm pretty agnostic right now.
Yeah, perfect. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, Steve Cortez. Make sure you tune in every night, 560. Chicago, from 5 to 7 every night, you're going to hear Steve Cortez, and you won't be disappointed. I promise you. Thanks again, Steve. Great having you.
You bet. Thanks, yeah.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. So now let's talk credit hacks. Here's what I mean by credit hacks. I try to do this once a week. It just gives you some feedback on what you can or can't do with your credit. There is so much bad information out there that I created a website. It's called creditscoresandmore.com. It's plural, creditscoresandmore.com. I didn't create it to get rich or anything. Basically, it's like this show. I want to put the facts out there. Like when we just had Steve, I don't want left wing, right wing, you know, whatever there is. I just want the truth. What's going on with the economy? What's this? What's that? So many times you go to, you know, everybody wants an 850 credit score. Is it possible? Probably not, but we can get you, you know, as high as we can. So I try to every week say, you know, here's a credit hack. Here's something. Here's some advice on what you can or maybe should do in regards to your credit. So right now I want to talk about errors. Okay. 3 out of 5 people have misinformation on their credit report. How do you know? You don't, because you probably never pull your credit. You get your Discover credit score. You get your Credit Karma score, but you don't really see your credit unless you pull your credit. Or you have somebody like myself pull your credit. You say, Dan, I have a 800 credit score. I need, you know, pre-approve me for a mortgage. I pull your credit and I'm like, oh boy, you got a 680 on your mortgage score. And they're like, why? That's 100 and some points less than I thought where I was. So then I give them their credit report, or we sit there and review their credit, and they're like, well, that's not me. I don't have that. That's paid off. That's bad information. So the bad information is going to equate to you not having that credit score that you thought you had before we spoke. So let me walk you through some things. How do we get to find, or how do we find out the bad information or the wrong information or the errors on your credit report? Well, there's probably one major way, maybe two major ways to do it. But the basic thing is you pull your credit. First thing you're going to say is, how do I pull that credit? Is it a hard hit? And is there a cost? Well, let's go through those things. How do I pull it? Well, go to creditscoresandmore.com. No, this isn't an infomercial. I put these tools together for you. I don't do anything with it. It's for you. So to go to creditscoresandmore.com, the best thing I can do is say there's three main steps on there that I always kind of promote. Step one, do it. It's a free system. It monitors your credit. It gives you a credit score, one of 37 different credit scores. It's one of 37. So it's not the credit score that when you're talking to somebody about a car loan or a mortgage or whatever, that's used. Nobody uses this score. It's an educational tool. It's called your Vantage score. Okay. So go in there. It does credit monitoring. It does a whole slew of things, and it's free. There's nothing. There's no strings attached. There's no gimmick. It might say, hey, if you upgrade to this system, you know, you can get this. Don't upgrade. Don't spend a nickel. Please don't do any of it. That's it. Just subscribe. Step two, that's where you're going to go and get your FICO scores. These are the credit scores that all the lenders use. Lenders, insurance companies, auto loans, credit cards, we all use this system. You can go in and go to creditscoresandmore.com and click step two. You get a discounted rate if you pull your credit. I would highly suggest you pull all three credit reports. There's TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. Why all three? Well, the erroneous information might only show up on one of the three. So you have it. Okay. I think it's going to cost maybe like $40. But you now have the fundamentals of what you need to do and look at. So go through it meticulously and see, you know, check on there. Are there errors? If there's errors, what do you need to do? That's where step three comes in. You can do all of the above on step three. You go in, you subscribe. It's $89 a month. $89 for credit repair, credit monitoring, identity theft protection, identity monitoring. There's an attorney on staff to help you with all your legal questions. You can create a will, a trust. You can do a slew of things on this system. Many times people call me and I pull their credit and their credit score is below the triggers that we need to get them a mortgage. So what do? We set them up in this system. The system, it should probably take you 60 to 90 days of their systems, their counseling, and their advice and hard work to get your credit scores up to the maximum they can be. Okay? Then stop it. Don't use it anymore. You could still use it if you want credit monitoring, identity theft protection, identity monitoring, the whole ball of wax. You can pull your credit once a month. It's a soft pull. It doesn't affect your credit scores. You can use it for all these things for $89 a month. If you're using Liberty Law or you're using an identity theft protection company or a credit monitoring company, you're paying way more than $89 a month. But you can use step three in all these cases. One-stop shop. I'll put it that way. So, where we started with this is a credit hack. The credit hack is making sure erroneous information is not on your credit report. Where you start is by getting your credit report and looking through it, putting out disputes or getting it fixed. So that's my credit hack of the day. Don't go away. When we come back, it's coming up tax time. So I have Pat Noon from PJN Tax Solutions on, and he's going to get the IRS off your ASS. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is the Mortgage Update on AM 560. Once again, here's your host, Dan Frio.
Okay, now we're going to need a business manager to help us avoid paying taxes.
Taxes?
A tax is a terrible, hairy, liberal monster. With big teeth. The only thing that can stop the terrible tax monster is a Republican.
Great introduction for my next guest, Pat Noon of PJN Tax Solutions Group in St. Charles. Welcome back, Pat.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me.
We're 60 days away from taxes. 60 days. Think about it. So you probably out there, you've received all the information you need. You should have between your W-2s and everything else. So I asked Pat to come in and basically tell us, and here's my question for you, Pat. So welcome back, Pat Noon. So
thank
those
you.
Of you listen to the show, Pat's a sponsor of the show. We have him on as much as we can, especially this time of year, to talk to you guys about how, why, and should you file your taxes? And what I want to talk to today about is all the systems out there that can be used. And there's a purpose for every one of these. So that's what we're going to talk about. So thanks for coming on, Pat.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What's your bio?
So my short bio is born and raised in Elmwood Park. Typical Irish Catholic family.
Top of the morning to you.
Four brothers, three sisters.
Are you kidding me?
Two parents and one bathroom in the whole house.
Pets?
Oh, God, we always had cats and dogs.
Gotcha.
We would always put out bowls of milk for the cats and water for the dogs. But then graduated from DePaul in 81, passed the CPA exam in 83, and have been doing taxes and accounting now for nearly 40 years. So finally starting to get the hang of it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So why I asked you in today is I'll break it down. There's three components of how you can file your taxes. Okay. There's the onlines, like the TurboTaxes and everything that. It's $20. Then there's the tax place at every corner that you see, and you're going to start seeing those probably as soon as the weather breaks, because the person out there flipping the signs and all that, they're at every corner, like I don't even know the specific names of those. So that's another one. And I know I don't know personally, but I know a lot of people that do that they're teachers, and you know, there could even be housewives. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with any of that. Mm-hmm. They could be truck drivers or whatever in their normal lives, but they, during the tax season, they'll work there and make some money and do taxes. And again, nothing wrong with that. But then there's the professionals like yourself. So let's break down each bucket. What's the pros and cons of each one of those? Everyone has a pro, but everyone has a con. So if we were to say, okay, the turbo taxes that you pay $19, you can file your taxes and it's a plug and play. Who's that for?
TurboTax is typically for the most simplistic of returns. Maybe you have one or two W-2s from an employer, maybe a little bit of interest income. They're not very extravagant as far as possibly having K-1s from partnerships or from S-corporations or even from trusts. Maybe not even rental property, just your very, very basic return.
You have one job, you get a W-2 and a paycheck, and you can go on there and just blip, 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 and you're done.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So that's just the simplest. The when you're buying a program, you can buy the free version, the standard version, or the professional version.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's the free version, basically, is what you're saying. Okay. So the tax return company is at every corner. It's like you see a McDonald's, you look across the street, and there's a tax servicing place. What's the pros of that? Or what clients are going there?
Well, I just recently met with a new client, and that was his question to me. Why should I choose you over H&R Block? I think it was an H&R Block in his neighborhood that he was going to. And I told him, I said, well, the main difference between H&R Block and ourselves is that the person working on your return at H&R Block, most likely it's a part-time job for them.
Right.
Okay, they have other employment. And after tax season, you're probably not going to be able to find that person because they'll be back to their full-time job.
Yeah.
Whereas with us, you know, we're there, you know, 365 days a year. All we do is taxes. We don't do bookkeeping. We don't do payroll. All we do is taxes, both preparation and resolution work.
Gotcha.
All year long.
Okay. So here's the way I look at it is for those that just have the basic job with the pay stub and W-2 possibly, but might not be tech savvy. You know, like my parents, they don't even have a computer, but my dad gets get Social Security and pension. Probably a pretty simple return.
Should be.
So they go.
Absolutely.
They're my dad's 90. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have a computer. Even if he did, he couldn't probably even. I love the guy, but he probably couldn't turn it on. So he can go to that. And it's probably cost effective for him. It's not in detail. And they're probably not going to make an error. They're plugging in the data from this little sheet onto the computer and hitting return.
I've had potential clients call me, and I've told them the same thing. You know what? Your return is pretty simple. You know, if you want, save the money, you know, go buy TurboTax. And if you have any questions, give me a call. Cool. I'll be glad to answer questions.
I love the honesty. Because there are people do that to me, too. They'll call, you know, I want to refinance, get a lower rate, do this, do that, do this, that. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, you know what? You're good.
Yeah, you had a story, a week or two ago when you were on, about a guy who thought he had a higher interest rate.
Yeah.
And then it turns out his interest rate was much lower than he thought. And you said to him, stay where you're at.
Honestly, how do I say this one? He could have probably been duped. If he called somebody else, they probably would have ran through the process for him and did it and made a bunch of money and saved him $50. I can't sleep that way.
No, I don't. There's a lot of tax resolution commercials that you hear on the radio.
Yeah.
They're the same way.
Right.
You know, oh, come see us. You know, you'll pay, you know, 15 cents on the dollar and we'll do an offer and compromise. And they will. They'll do the offer, but they'll know darn well going in that it's not going to be accepted because last year, the IRS only accepted 40% of all offers submitted, so you got less than a 50-50 shot going in, and they'll know that.
Right.
But they'll go through the motions, and they'll say, when it comes back rejected, they'll say, sorry, we tried.
And they charge you for it. Even though they
big money. Anywhere between $5,000 to $10,000.
So let's get on to the professionals. What is a, I know this might be tough, but what's a typical client of yours? Or what's the, you know, probably somebody with, you know, rental income, maybe a side business, business owners. Like, what is your, who would want to come to you? Because it's not going to be $19.99, you know, file your taxes for $19.99.
Right. So, right. No, typically, our typical client is someone who is self-employed. Maybe they're a realtor, and they receive a 1099 from their real estate office, and then from there it's either preparing Schedule C as a sole proprietor, or possibly if they have their business incorporated, we'll do a S corporation return, or if they're in partnership with someone, we'll do a partnership return. I just did one, wrapped up one late yesterday afternoon. Husband and wife. Husband is an insurance agent, self-employed, gets a 1099. And the wife has her own S corporation, so their return was, you know, your typical first two pages. They had itemized deductions. They had K-1 from an S corporation. The husband had Schedule C from his insurance agency. That was a pretty involved return,
right?
Something that I wouldn't trust to TurboTax.
Yeah, I had recently a client that sent me in his taxes, and he has, I think, 12 rental properties. And I'm pretty good at reading tax returns. I've been doing this for 30 some years.
Right.
He lumped everything in one piece. So he filed his, is it Schedule C?
No, Schedule E.
E, that's right. Schedule E. E. He had on a Schedule E, real estate. Then he lumped in all his rents received.
Into one column?
One column.
Oh, that's not bad. That's bad. He shouldn't be doing that.
All of it in one depreciation. All of it in one tax cell. All of it this. And he got upset with me because I'm like, I have, when you're getting a loan, I have to break them down per property to see where you're at with things. Can he do it that way?
No, no, absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely
I got into a pretty heated debate about it because I'm like, I can't figure this out.
I just turned away a client that tried doing the same thing. She had three rental properties. And I told her, I said, if you look at page one of Schedule E, there's three columns on there. And each column is for each property. Okay. And the properties need to be reported separately. And she wanted to lump them together. I said, no, go back and break out the rent, the mortgage, the real estate taxes, the homeowner's insurance on each property.
Got it.
I have a lady scheduled to come in later this tax season. She has 27 rental properties.
God bless her, but I don't know how they do it.
So I'm going to need 9 Schedule E's with 3 on each page.
Yeah. And on my side of the fence, it's a nightmare, but it's how you have to do it. That's what I was trying to tell the guy, but I didn't know for a fact that that's what it had to be. So we're going back and forth. I'm like, I can't do your loan this way. I just, I can't figure it out. So just, you know, apply for the loan. Okay. So what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Best way is my cell phone. I don't use landlines. I have only cell. And my cell phone is 630-415-5296. Again, 630-415-5296. Or visit my website, pjntaxsolutions.com.
That's pjntaxsolutions.com. What I want to do, though, is I want to, we're going to put together a special YouTube edition of this because it is coming tax time. So if you want to check out an in-depth off-the-air conversation with Pat, please go to The Mortgage Update with Dan Frio on YouTube. It'll also be on podcast. And we're going to talk about, we're going to kind of recap this whole system on, you know, what he does, how he does it, why use Pat, and then when you should maybe use, you know, one of the tax solution companies right at your corner. And then also on there, if you get audited, and if you, I've been through it, if you get audited, it is a nightmare. And we're going to talk to Pat about what he does to help his clients get through that nightmare. So don't go away. Thanks again, Pat, for coming in. But again, check us out on YouTube, The Mortgage Update with Dan Frio. Take care.